flattery. Puloweo might not consciously notice, but seduction need not be conscious, and no one ever made an enemy of a parent by praising the child's beauty. When the pattern was downloaded, she consulted Bennett's sumptuary guide to the spire arm until she found something she could reasonably wear as a top for a sarong, a light poncho worn by the Kushkins on Bandanope. It was short, made of diaphanous cloth. She entered her personal measurements. Then she went to a drawer, pulled out two bolts of any cloth she had brought with her, and inserted the data thread into the port, downloaded the design and the cut into the cloth. The micro-electro-mechanical weave shimmered and became a duck-wing strong and matching poncho top. The gaudy ensemble would win no kudos in the fashion houses of Hadley Prime, but it would pass for inconspicuous here. The director's home lay in the Nolopatadi district, easily reached on the maglev sandpiper line. The house proved an oval building of intricately carved dark wood that encircled a central courtyard open to the sky. In the courtyard, interlocking fish ponds were fed by an elaborately decorated terracotta rain catcher and cistern. Planters, atria, and the artful placement of furniture served in lieu of internal walls, so that from any point around the orbit of the house, one could cross to any other point. Overhanging eaves and runnels in the courtyard prevented rainwater from entering the residence itself. Puloweo met all of Bridget Bond's fairly low expectations that evening. She, now he, proudly displayed the results of the surgery and panted and pawed and squeezed and made numerous exclamations of what were apparently intended as signs of masculine appreciation and pleasure. Bridget Bond made a few comments herself, but they were planned and intended to achieve a certain rapport with the director. She had earlier applied a numbing agent so that she would not be distracted by untoward sensations at crucial moments, but in retrospect she thought that she needn't have bothered. There was a Terran proverb she had heard, practice makes perfect, but Puloweo had not spent enough continuous time as either man or woman to get much practice at either. She was slightly nettled that the director had not noticed the effort she had put into her outfit. The deliberation was not supposed to be noticeable, but some comment would have been welcome. Instead, the director had pouted a bit that she hadn't worn her uniform, and the hound wondered if this indicated some need for dominance. So she took the upper role, told him exactly what to do, praised him when he did it right, slapped him when he didn't. She could not help thinking of how one trained puppies. She had worn a crystal pendant, a product of Wolford and Beale on New Erin, as it happens. New Erin was the subject of an earlier chapter. And as she moved rhythmically above him, it swung to and fro, catching the light from the foyer. She murmured to him in a low monotone, at first using standard terms of endearment and pleasure, but after a time shifting to suggestions of sleepiness and fatigue. Are you tired? You can't be tired already. You can hardly keep your eyes open. Soon, aided by the physical release, Puloweo lay in a drowsy hypnotic state upon the cushions and silks that Cockers used for beds. Bridget Bond softly dismounted, pulled a sling chair to the side of the bed, and set to work. It did not take long to learn the passcodes and the location of the hard key to the STC database. Suspecting the Cocker love of indolence meant a great deal of telefacing from home, she tried the keys and codes on Puloweo's home face and was gratified to find her assumption justified. She used a data thread to download the information into her clothing. The database was rather large, and she could leave nothing but the duckweed outfit in active memory. That was chancy. One system crash, and she'd be wearing two gray towels around her waist and shoulders. When she was finished, she erased all memories and logs from the face. She had been wearing finger caps, so no genetic information was on the keyboard. And for any genetic traces found elsewhere, she had established a reason that any Cocker would readily accept. A moan escaped from the bed area. Bridget Bond frowned because Puloweo should not be coming out of the hypnosis on his own. She dashed across the courtyard around the fish ponds and between two thick pillars carved to resemble tree trunks, coming to the mound of cushions and drapes on which the director lay. Pulaweo was still under, but his mouth opened and closed slackly, and his throat, loose in sleep, struggled to form sounds. Talking in his sleep, she thought, he must be dreaming. But the Cocker dialect was built of lazy lips and throats, and Bridget Bond's implant began to make sense out of the moans, helping her to hear them in Galactic. "Where did you go?" the director asked. "Why did you leave me?" Bridget Bond had been leaning over the bed to hear better. Now she stood straight and alarmed, thinking furiously. He couldn't have come out of it. "I needed to use your facility," she temporized. "Go back to sleep now." "He is asleep. Why did you ask him about the access codes?"
"Him?"
It was eerie enough to be conversing with a sleeping man. To hear him speak of himself in such a detached fashion reminded Bridget Bond of old Diebold tales of spookin' that could take over your body. "He was going to give me that information in the morning," she said. "Hush, you sleep too. That was quite a ride we had. You must be tired." "I'm not tired, but oh, you were so good. And your clothing, that was a nice compliment. I don't want them to hurt you." "No one's going to hurt me. They'll be waiting outside on the street to the maglev. He suggested it. He said the secret was worth the risk." "What secret?" "Oh, I don't know. I'll remember when he wakes up, I suppose." Of course, the paraperception. Awake, both halves of the brain would be cross-talking. Right now, she was talking to Pulaweo's emotive perceptive half, but naturally they gave both hemispheres access to the speech center. Note to self, when interrogating a paraperceptive, be sure to hypnotize both halves. Gently she calmed the frightened half of the brain, then speaking to the right ear, she told the other half that he'd had a confused dream and he would forget it when he awoke. She described their lovemaking as more passionate than it had been and played to his fantasies by telling him that she had worn her hound's uniform and they had played dominance games. She told him that she had left an hour before the current clock time. She told him they had kissed at the door. There. The memories most easily recalled are the ones that we wish we'd had. If he remembered from his other half that she had left the bed during the night, he would ascribe that to her female needs. Then, surrendering to an impulse, she pulled up the right eyelid. The eyeball was rolled back in its socket, moving in a slow rhythm. She pulled up the left eyelid, and it was looking right at her. "Goodbye," she told the left ear. "You were wonderful. I shall never forget you." It was a small lie, and she needed the gratitude and cooperation of that half. I wound up on the wrong page, excuse me. There we go.